everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 289, inching towards episode number 300, coming up real soon, real soon. A happy new year to all of you. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, please drop us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun show for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Paige Davis is an entertainer, a host, a dancer, an actress, a singer, just a true Renaissance woman. You certainly know Paige from her incredible hosting duties of Trading Spaces, TV's groundbreaking design reality show, for which she received 2 Emmy Award nominations. She then invited all of us to her wedding on an episode of TLC's A Wedding Story, which became one of the highest-rated cable shows of that season. And she hosted the OWN Network's Home Made Simple, for which she received her 3rd Emmy nomination. Paige's book, Page by Page, A Year of Trading Spaces, is in my hand right now, and it spent several weeks at the top of the New York Times bestsellers list. On the stage, Paige received rave reviews for her performance in the Broadway revival of Boeing Boeing, and before that, she traveled the country performing the title role of Sweet Charity in the show's Broadway tour. She starred on Broadway as Roxy Hart in the musical Chicago. Paige played Babette, the flirtatious and flauncy feather duster, on Broadway and on the first national tour of Broadway's Beauty and the Beast. And she's been in like 40 more shows. She even debuted a solo cabaret act called Taking a Chance. She is just one of those people that when you see her, you smile. I smile. And now she is here sharing that energy with us. Paige Davis, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. That was a mouthful.
Well, I had to cut stuff out. You've done a lot of stuff, Paige.
My uncle always says, more than a mouthful is wasteful.
There you go. Now we know. That's what we're going to carry with us into this new year. We must say Happy New Year to you, Paige.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Now, are you one of those people who makes resolutions?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I think those people who makes resolutions on a daily, weekly basis.
Nice.
You know, I think I wake up every morning thinking, today I'll do better, you know, on my diet or on this or on that or whatever, and every night I go to bed a failure. But I think that naturally New Year's bring out resolutions for sure. I mean, I grew up Jewish, so for me, the beginning of each school year, you know, the high holidays would come around, and that had its own New Year resolution.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, this new year. I just finished writing a blog this morning that's going to get posted. Well, it was supposed to be posted this morning, but I'm late.
It's okay. It's okay.
And so I guess my first resolution will be not to be late with my posting. And it was, you know, essentially about, like, well, what, you know, at this time of year with resolutions and everything, I thought it was a good time to maybe bring up this video that I saw. It was going around on Facebook feed, and it's just of Oprah. I don't even know what it's from. She's being interviewed somewhere. She's giving class or something, and she says, there are no mistakes.
Nice.
And there are no failures, and there's only detours, and, you know, losses are wake-up calls, and, you know, you just have to keep going.
Yeah.
When you make a mistake, it's about, you know, just taking you in a different direction. Listen to what you're supposed to be seeing. And I thought, wow, that's a really good time for this to be going around on Facebook.
Yeah.
Right at the new year.
Until Yom Kippur, and then my mom calls me to tell me all the mistakes I made. So there's that, Paige.
Oh, yeah. Because that's not something your mother should feel sinful for, telling you how terrible you are.
I love it. I love it. Well, my friend, we have so much to chat about. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I said in your bio, I said entertainer, host, dancer, actor, singer. Is there a word that particularly jumps out at you that you just glam onto?
Wow, that's a really good question, Ken. No, I guess I always just say I'm a performer.
Nice.
But that doesn't really encapsulate what I do.
Yeah.
Either. I don't know. I guess I certainly don't consider myself a Renaissance woman.
I consider you. It's already in your bio. It's in the bio. It's done. You can't deny that now.
I don't know. It's funny when they say occupation on any sort of, you know, application or whatever. I never know what to write because I want to write actor, but that always seems cheesy. And I want to write dancer because that's what's in my heart, but that doesn't capture nearly enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really am all those things. I'm dancer, singer, actress, author. You know, I'm also a wife and a dog parent.
And a dog parent.
A sister and a daughter. And it's a lot. I mean, that's a big part. People forget that part of their lives, like especially in my business. If
yeah.
you see, you know, you run into someone on the street or you see them, you know, out and about and it's like, hey, how you doing? Oh, I just finished this play. And then I'm, you know, it's like, well, but how are you doing?
Right.
You know, and to some extent, that's not all narcissism, because when you're an artist and when you're in this type of business, a lot of who you are is that.
Right.
You know, when I'm in a show, that's much more than my job. Frankly, that is who I am.
Yeah.
You know, that's I'm an artist. I guess that. Maybe that's what it is. I'm an artist.
We'll go with that.
But I don't think of myself as quite creative enough to be an artist. Like, I think of my husband as an artist. But, yeah, we can go with that.
Okay.
I won't be self-deprecating. I'll say.
It's a new year. There's no self-deprecation on a gay radio show.
Right. That's my
Come
second
on.
Resolution. One, get my blog in on time. Two, you know, self-deprecating. These are both really good resolutions for me, by the way. This has become a cathartic interview.
And we're barely into it. And three, don't forget number three, add Renaissance woman to your resume.
Well, that falls under don't be self-deprecating.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, all right. Still only at two. That's good, because I don't know how many I could handle.
We'll get to four.
Oh, wait,
I'm shooting for four.
I just broke a resolution already.
See?
I should believe that I can handle as many resolutions as I want.
We're going to work through this together. This is why we do this show, Paige, to work through these things, to work through them. Well, we have to just jump. Let's start with Trading Spaces. I mean, we're going to talk about your life on the stage as well, but Trading Spaces, my gosh. Tell everyone how that gig came into your life.
Well, the short answer is I just auditioned for it. The slightly longer answer is I wouldn't have known about the audition if it hadn't have been for a dear friend who actually worked at Banyan Productions, which was the company that produced Trading Spaces for TLC. And she didn't work on Trading Spaces, but she worked on a couple of other shows. And Banyan was very small back then, and she heard that people were, you know, were looking for a new host for the show. And so she called me, and she's, like, screaming into my answering machine, because that's back when we had answering machines.
Oh, yeah.
Saying, you know, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, there's this show, and it's called Trading Spaces, and you're perfect for it. And I knew what show she was talking about because they were, you know, they were replacing the host from the first season.
Right.
And I'd never seen it, but I knew what she was talking about. And I called her back, and I said, I've never done TV, I've never hosted anything, and I don't have a background in interior design, so how am I perfect for this show? And she's like, I just know it. And it was really at her just utter persistence and insistence that I essentially begged for an audition. I really could not get in. To save my life, I couldn't get in. I always joke that I had blood under my fingernails from clawing my way into that audition. Because I just didn't have television on my resume. You know, I was all theater.
Yeah.
And was relatively young, although not like just out of college or anything. But, you know, it was kind of one of those, oh, you know, don't call us, we'll call you sort of things. And after kind of being, and this is just for an audition, mind you.
Right.
This is just
to get in the door, yeah.
And you know, I'm like, I'm not auditioning for NBC's fall lineup. Like, how will I get television experience if I can't even audition for a small little, you know, cable show? It's funny that you call yourself the, what is your tagline?
Our little gay radio show that could,
yeah. Yeah. We used to call Trading Spaces the little cable show that could.
Nice.
So I was like, come on, guys. You know, so I actually ended up placing a phone call to the general manager of TLC. And I said, look, you know, I understand that my resume doesn't reflect television experience, but, you know, please bear in mind I have decades of experience in the business, and I just want a chance to be seen. You know, I understand this is an unscripted show, and I think that my background in theater and my training in improv is actually ideally suited for, you know, that type of situation. And then I get this phone call from my agent the next day, and she's like, you can go down to Philly, because that's where the auditions were. She said, they'll see you at the end if there's time. And I was indeed the last person to be seen. They almost didn't see me. And it was only at somebody else's insistence, like, she's been waiting here forever, you know, we have to see her. And then eventually even getting cast is another just very, very long story. But I knew that day I had it.
What do you remember about your first episode?
I remember, well, I don't know what I remembered in the moment. I think my memories of those first episodes are really more colored by hindsight. I think what I realize now is that my lack of experience was probably the one thing that made me the most successful in the genre, because, you know, like I said, I'd seen commercials for Trading Spaces. You know, I back in the first season, I was on daytime television.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would watch Wedding Story, Baby Story, Dating Story, Makeover Story. You know, and then it'd be 4 o'clock, and I'd turn from TLC to ABC to watch Oprah. So I never watched Trading Spaces, but I saw the commercials constantly. And what it looked like to me is the host was in there with the families, you know, helping them redo the rooms, talking to them, lending a hand, you know, all this stuff. And little did I know that she was locked in a trailer somewhere and showed up to, you know, paint on camera for, you know, a minute and then drop the brush and leave. But I just assumed it was reality television.
Yeah.
and everything else about it. That's the great thing about Trading Spaces. You know, it was really one of the first ones. And what you saw was, that's all real. That's real. Though, I mean, we're really doing the work. There's no, like, team that swoops in and, you know, finishes for the homeowners or whatever.
And you're really doing it in 2 days, and you're really doing
really
it for $1,000.
Really doing it for $1,000, really staying up all night in order to finish it often. And so, you know, that was really intense and incredible. It was actually very, 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 very hard work.
It sounds like it. You wrote this in the book. You wrote, "Watching Monique trying to figure out how to use a staple gun got me to thinking about another reason people watch Trading Spaces. It is empowering. People realize they don't have to be Bob Vila to make big changes to their home." For our listeners who, you know, maybe some of our very younger listeners who don't know Trading Spaces, I don't think that people really understand how big it was. It was all we talked about at work. It was all everyone was talking about the next day.
It's true. You know, it really catapulted a whole new genre of television. You know, it was because of the success and fun of that show that so many, you know, it's kind of like because HGTV is as big as it is now, even though we happen to be on TLC, you know, all those shows just started springing
yeah.
up. And what you were saying is what I learned
yeah.
was when I was doing those first shows, there's no script. You just show up. Camera captures it. I didn't know any better. I didn't know to be a talking head. I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to do what it is I thought it was. So I was just myself.
Love it.
And I think what I learned in those episodes and then watching the show slowly become such a big hit and become so popular and me doing nothing but just being myself, you know, asking questions that maybe a lot of hosts are probably tuning out when they're walking on into a scenario with homeowners or whatever. I thought I was supposed to really listen.
Yeah.
Like, and so in a way, my inexperience is what I now know disarmed me and allowed me to just be free. And I do think that it ended up being one of the most cherished lessons I ever had in my life, because, you know, everybody grows up trying to please this person or please that person, or what do I need to be for this friend, or what do I need to be for my parents, or what do I need to be for this teacher, or, and you don't really find your way. And for some reason, because the task was at hand, go in, do these two rooms, talk to these homeowners, get them to talk about their feelings, that I just let go of everything but the task, and then was accepted, loved. The show became a hit. I'd walk down the street. It's like, Paige, we love you.
Huge.
You know? And I'm like, wow, just for being me. I didn't have to do anything but be myself. And it was just like, that is the biggest lesson in the world.
I love it. It strikes me then, now that you've said that, that you're someone that I kind of want to have a breakdown around. Because, Paige, it's possible that I've watched every reveal that you've ever done, and some of them are a little bit rough. What's going through your head when it's obvious someone's about to have a breakdown?
Well, I want to calm them.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be completely remiss if I didn't admit that if I thought tears were coming, there is a part of my brain going, this is going to be good TV.
Right.
As long as it's real, what you don't want to do is force someone
no.
to cry or force a scenario where you're trying to get them to cry. I mean, that's what people's antenna go up on that.
Right.
But when it's really real and when you know that the other homeowners and designer and you and carpenter have worked really hard to create a gorgeous room, if they're going to cry, you're like, wow, this is golden.
Right.
And especially if they love it. You know, that's why it's like everybody says they love it when they hate it, and they do, but, you know, that's sort of like dream television, like, could this happen to me?
Right.
Aspect of it is so exciting.
And it could happen to us because it's only 2 days and $1,000.
That's right.
It's accessible. Now, somewhere in the mix, Paige, gay couples started popping up on the show. Do you remember any conversations around that, or was it just integrated into the mix? I mean, it wasn't like, oh, big event, you know, advertised like the Vegas episode. We're going to have gay couples. It just kind of
happened. Oh, yeah.
Happened.
No, it certainly wasn't advertised, but obviously there was discussion about it. I mean, we're talking 2002.
Yeah.
Talking 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, In particular, the gay marriage movement has really forged the movement forward for many gay rights and gay understanding. And that movement, you know, really by design, I mean, with the use of social media, with the use of, you know, the internet, with the use of all these things that are now so much more prominent, and you can reach so many more people, the compound effect of that growth is astonishing. So if, you know, it takes decades and decades and decades for civil change
yeah.
to take place. And yet this was only 12 years ago. And we were like, holy sh**.
Yeah.
You know, and one of our episodes was two gay couples. I don't know if you remember that one.
Isn't that the black and white one?
Oh, yeah, those were two gay couples. But the first one, I believe, please don't put a gun to my head. they're all mixed together in my brain. But I think the first one that aired was the one in Boston, and it was a lesbian couple and a gay couple, two women and two men. And they lived above and below each other in this kind of like brownstone thing in Boston. And we had there was a drag queen who came.
Oh, fun.
And it was Twal.
Oh.
It was the Twal episode.
Okay. I don't remember that one.
That was the first one, and then there was the couple in Jersey City. They were in the same building. That's when Hildy put the red fur on the wall.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I'm still in touch with them. Actually, I was the officiant of their wedding.
No way.
Yeah, way.
I love it. I don't think people really get it. I mean, we're not just talking about, oh, let's remember some episodes. For those of us who are sitting at home who are gay, when those couples came up, it was so incredibly validating.
Well, you think about even just the commercial right now that's going around virally, the Tide commercial.
Yeah.
I happen to know both of those guys.
Of course you do.
They
you performed their wedding, too. It's amazing.
No. Patrick was in Casa Valentina with Nick Westrate, and Patrick was in Hunchback of Notre Dame with Eric Lieberman. He's
Look
the
at
one
that.
With the beard. So we actually happen to know both of those boys. So, and it's like, it's shocking. Like, just that Tide is doing this commercial
yeah.
with this full-on out gay couple, you know, so you can imagine. That's now. And this was then.
Right. Big. It was so big. It was so big. Well, let me ask you, last question about Trading Spaces. Do you ever walk around in your daily life and wish that you still had a Paige cam?
Constantly.
Yes. Okay.
Of course, I think we may have found our third resolution.
Get a Paige cam.
Because, well, yeah. I mean, everybody has one on their phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Blur. I've had a Paige cam. It's like I'm Dorothy.
page running across the street. Yeah, oh, it's there. It's totally there. Although, I have to ask you now, your name came up last week on last week's show because we talked about, my co-host Becca and I talked about TLC's new show coming out, which everybody's talking about, not really in a good way, My Husband's Not Gay. Have you heard about this one?
I barely have heard about it.
You'll
have to fill me in a little bit.
I'm not even going to because it's that offensive. Let me back up a step and say, TLC, a little different than when you were on TLC.
Oh, yeah, it's really, really changed. And I don't know what that's about. Well, of course I know what that's about. It's about ratings and money,
yeah.
And it's the same that, you know, everything is about. So it's working for them.
It's working.
Obviously.
All right.
I feel like, you know, the more scandal, the more successful they get. And everybody says, you know, they hate it and they're never going to watch it. And then somehow or another, it's still going with, you know, some of the highest rated shows on television. So somebody's watching.
Yeah. I miss Trading Spaces.
Very different.
Yeah.
HGTV has sort of taken over where TLC switched.
Which it was funny. At the time, and this was totally not founded in anything that ever happened with anyone, I remember friends and I saying, no, we're TLC watchers. We watch Trading Spaces. And it was like a Sharks and the Jets kind of thing with HGTV and TLC, which was completely fabricated by us. I don't think that was a thing. Just put that out.
I think it's a real thing.
Yeah, not a thing. All right, let's talk about your life on the stage. You have this great quote in the book. You say, "There's something different about the feeling I get when I'm dancing and performing on stage. I am transported." What was Paige Davis's first time on the stage? What was the earliest Little Paige role?
The earliest thing I can remember, and the truth is I'm only remembering it because I just recently remembered it. I sang in school.
Nice.
The first song I ever sang in public was "I'm Getting Nuttin' for Christmas," and I was just recently at a fun, there's a great thing the Broadway community does every Thursday night called Broadway Sessions.
Yeah.
And we had the big Christmas special a couple weeks ago, and somebody sang. They actually changed the lyrics for "I'm Getting Nuttin' for Christmas," but when they sang it, I was like, oh, my God, that's the first song I ever sang in public. And
flashback.
I'd forgotten all about it. And so that's the first thing.
I love it. Now, I saw you in Beauty and the Beast. I was like 14. You were maybe 15. It looked like great fun.
Well, it was great fun. And, of course, that show is of paramount importance in my life because that's where I met Patrick.
Indeed. Tell everyone about Patrick Page.
Well, Patrick Page is his name, which is hilarious. Depending on where you put the comma in that sentence.
Yeah, there you go.
It's the same thing.
Punctuation.
Tell us about Patrick Page. Tell us about Patrick Page. Same thing. We met doing the first national tour of Beauty and the Beast. He played Lumiere, and I played Babette.
Look
as
at
you
that.
Said, Heather Duster. And we actually stayed on the road for 2.5 years. Because it was just an amazing, amazing experience. I had just gotten a divorce. I'd left Los Angeles. I mean, I was not going to go back. So I technically, literally didn't have a home. Patrick had sublet his apartment in New York. This was like back in the day. I mean,
right. People
talk about the golden age of Broadway, and I don't know anything about that. But I can tell you about the years when a production contract was like striking gold.
Nice.
And you know, we were just paid so well. The per diem was incredible. We sat in cities for months at a time. I mean, we were in Chicago for 6 months. We were in Seattle for 3 months. We
wow.
were in D.C. for 4 months. Like, so we were staying in corporate apartments. We had kitchens. We had full lives. We were traveling the world. The show was enormous.
Yeah.
So when we would change cities, it was always like 4 or 5 days between cities, and we'd usually go like to some bed and breakfast somewhere, or we go, like, I mean, life was good. Let's just put it that way. And we stayed on the road for 2.5 years, and it was incredible.
Wow.
It was incredible. We saw the whole country, and we were in love. And it was just a great, great, great time.
Was there a moment when you said, listen, you seem like a great guy. Is there any chance you would change your name?
Well, it didn't come up, actually, until it was in my court, because Paige is actually my middle name.
Right.
Mindy is my first name. And in my career, I was using all three names, Mindy Paige Davis, was on my, you know, it was on my headshots, it was on my resume, whatever. But everything else was just Mindy Davis. So initially when he proposed, I was already in a little bit of a quandary because I didn't know, was I going to become Mindy Page Page?
Right.
Was I going to become...
That's a lot Mindy, to handle.
Mindy Page, and everybody would think I just dropped my last name. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, this is all getting very confusing. And then I was like, I was engaged, and I was like wondering about this because I wanted to take his last name. And during that time is when I booked Trading Spaces, and TLC asked me if I would be willing to go by Page, just go Page Davis. It's something I'd wanted to do actually my whole life. And in fact, doing Mindy Page Davis was, you know, that came up when I tried to change my name to Page when I was in college to go just by Page, because I thought Mindy was just too, I don't know, childish, you know, and I sort of, I brought the Mindy. Like, I'm enough Mindy without being named Mindy.
There you go. There you go.
Page kind of, like, gives me a little bit of gravitas. And I tried to do it. My family mocked me. They're like, oh, she's Mindy Page. I'm like, no, just Page. Just Page. And so I became, in my family, I became Mindy Page, like Cindy Lou or whatever. And I always hated that. And then TLC was like, will you just go by Page? I was like, oh, my God, I've been trying to do this forever, but I'm engaged to a man with the last name of Page, and I'm not going to become Page Page. So I had to tell Patrick, you know, well, first I had to make sure there wasn't a Page Davis in the union.
Right.
And then I had to tell Patrick, you know, I'm not going to take your last name. And so that's how I did it. So it was actually me that made it all so complicated.
Yeah.
I would have normally just been Mindy Page.
Right.
No one would have even known my middle name or cared.
I love it. I love it.
But now, of course, as much to my dismay, I am Page Page. And, of course, because even though I never changed my name legally, that is exactly what everybody calls me.
I can't know. You're Page Davis to me. You are Page Davis. Well, listen, we never have someone from Broadway on the show without talking a little bit about Broadway and a little bit of a lament. You know, as I've said before on the show, I'm extraordinarily fortunate that I grew up in New York City and my folks took us to shows all the time. And now, you know, with my friends and people who either live in New York City or who are visiting, it's those ticket prices, Paige, that make it kind of a prohibitive art form. And my worry, as we've expressed so many times on the show, is that it's this art form that a lot of people don't have access to. As someone who's been on Broadway and certainly married to someone who is such a presence on Broadway, what do we do?
That is a very good question, and obviously one that I'm torn because, you know, I want to be paid.
Right.
And everything else is so expensive that in order for me to also make a decent living, some of that ticket price is reflected in what I get paid.
Yeah.
Of course, it's very angering when the artist receives none of those high ticket prices, which can be very frustrating. You know, something Patrick talks a lot about is making sure that theater is very vital and making sure that theater, a live theater experience, offer something, like truly, truly offer something that television and film simply cannot.
Yeah.
That it's not enough for it just to be live. What we're seeing now is really a spring up of interactive shows.
Yeah.
Things where you don't know what's going to happen. You know, that's why sports are so exciting. It's interesting, like people will, you know, they'll spend a gazillion dollars going to sports games, and obviously, athletes will make a tremendous amount of money, and nobody cares about that. But the minute, you know, artists want to make money, it's, like, ridiculous.
Right.
They'll say that they like that they don't know the outcome, but then they'll watch a DVD, you know, 25 times in a year of the same story. So you just got to make it so that they feel there's something rich and layered and different. You know, we love to go to, say, theater festivals where there's, like, green shows outside, and there's, you know, there's got to be something that's very different where there's discussions afterward, panel discussions afterward or beforehand. It's got to be vital, and it's got to be something that you're driven to pay that money because
right.
You're going to get something you couldn't get any other way.
Love it. one of the best answers we've ever gotten to that question, Paige.
Oh, well, we can thank Patrick Page.
We will thank him. By the way, just a little side note, I am in no way trying to sow marital discord. I will just say, speaking from the eye, there's not a chance that I would be in a relationship with someone who is playing the part that he is currently playing. I feel it is one of the scariest roles in movies, in the books. So tell everyone what part Patrick is currently playing.
He's playing Frollo in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which in the animated film is a judge, but in the book, and they have gone back to the original in the stage version of the material, he is a priest, which makes it even more devastating.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the villain in the Hunchback story. He's
scary guy.
Essentially the reason why everything goes awry and why everyone dies.
Again, I want this to work out for you, Paige. I believe in this relationship, but it's a scary role, and I'm not happy about it.
Well, it's funny because, you know, when I met, I told you, you know, we met doing Beauty and the Beast, and his role was Lumiere, the, you know, candelabra.
Yeah.
And so he was, you know, quite figuratively and literally the light of the show.
Yeah.
I know Georgie just made a good poo, and so we've got to give her a treat. Quite insistent. She went on her little wee-wee cat.
Good job.
Good job, Georgie. Good girl. Good girl.
See, she's been on a radio show now. That's a resume builder right there.
I know, right? She's a star in the making. That's why you heard the barking. She was like, give me my treat. What was I going to say? So we met, and he was the light of the show. And since then, and we've been together almost 20 years now, he's always been the villain every single time. And I'm like, what is it with you meeting me and suddenly you're always the villain?
That's
crazy.
Hilarious.
And so now he is the villain.
That is hilarious.
And he's amazing. I mean, you guys, this show is so good. And, I don't want to be Pollyanna, but I think when Patrick and I discuss, you know, when we really discuss honestly about Hunchback of Notre Dame, this one that's, you know, currently on its, you know, trek to probably Broadway in the fall, if everything goes well, based on the Disney animated film, it's it does need work. I mean, there's restructuring things in the second act. There's, you know, there's all kinds of things in it that we think could be better. Hence, you know, that's why they do the out-of-town.
That's why they do it.
They did it in La Jolla. They're bringing it to Paper Mill Playhouse, which actually is in New Jersey.
Yeah, I know it well.
And then, you know, potentially onto Broadway. But it's just so good. It's like I see some of the things that might be need to be fixed, but it's like I don't care.
Right.
You know, I'm still crying at the end. I'm still, and I got to tell you, oh, my God, Michael Arden. Just stop it.
I've read amazing things already.
He is everything.
All right, we're checking this one out. We're checking this one out.
It's really good.
Well, Paige, we put together, could you have time for a quick little game? We put together a little game. We put together a little game for you to give you a chance to win some This Show Is So Gay magnets. And so we have come up, because you need them. You need This Show Is So Gay magnets. So we put together our normal game of some questions for you. If you get 3 out of 5 questions correct, we will send you some magnets. We'll also help you along. All of the answers for this week's quiz come from the best-selling book, Page by Page.
Oh, no, that's cruel.
You're going to do fine. I believe in you. We'll help you. Okay. All right, question number one, Paige Davis. When was the first time your name appeared in the newspaper, the first press that Mindy Paige Davis ever received?
I believe it was for a reading contest when I was a little girl.
The correct answer is when you won a reading contest at the local library in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Very good.
That's in the book?
Yeah. Paige, if it's not in the book, then I'm a stalker. So let's just say it's in the book. It's in the book. Very good.
She's stalking me to my days in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, in elementary school.
My devotion goes back a long way. Question number two.
You are in Cleveland, right?
I am now in Cleveland, yes.
That's very close to Wisconsin. You may have some explaining to do, Lucy.
All right. We'll talk about that off the air. Question number two. You already got one right. You're well on your way. Who was the center square when you appeared on Hollywood Squares?
Oh, mother.
I believe in you. This person also gave you a hand. They came and gave you some, you know, helped you out with some punchlines. How about the two people you were on Celebrity? We'll do a game show themed question number two. Or either of the people that you were on Celebrity Jeopardy with.
Well, people I was on Celebrity Jeopardy with were Hal Sparks and Julie Bowen.
There you go. See? You're fine.
The center square, it's so funny. I should know this, but I'm drawing a blank. It wasn't Joan Rivers.
It was not Joan Rivers.
And it wasn't Charo.
Charo was there.
Oh, and she's amazing.
I can't even imagine.
As smart as a whip.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I would wake up every morning and say, I hung out with Charo.
It's all an act. You know, plus she's a remarkable classical guitarist.
Oh, yeah.
The best in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And in between shows, and they were rebooting and people were changing, because you shoot a whole week of shows in one day. So when the celebrities were changing, she would quick change, and then she'd go out and play classical guitar for the viewing audience.
Unbelievable.
And entertain them and make them laugh, and she was a remarkable, remarkable person.
I'm already giving you credit, so it's okay.
Okay.
Perhaps was Howie Mandel?
Perhaps.
I'm going back and looking now, so that's okay. We're moving on because we did the Celebrity Jeopardy question.
Okay.
So you're fine, you're fine. Okay, so you have two right. We'll give you one and a half for that one. This part of the book really, you know, it just a couple sentences, but really killed me on this one. Question number three, who said this to you, Paige Davis? Quote, I didn't recognize you with the smile. Amazing part of the book.
I didn't recognize you with the smile?
Yeah.
It got really deep.
It got deep.
No,
this one's deep.
I don't even know the answer to that.
It was one of the Beach Boys.
I didn't recognize you with the smile?
Yes, because he did not recognize you.
Oh, I know, yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, it was Bruce. I saw him in an airport. That's right, because, yeah, I was going through some really hard stuff when I danced with the Beach Boys. That's when I was first getting separated from my husband, and, yeah.
Amazing. It was an amazing, so well written that part. Okay, you got one and a half. We're going to get the next one and a half with these next two questions, because I'm going to lead you through them. When
this is terrible. I can't.
No, you're fine. You're going to be fine. That magnet is coming. It's on its way. When Betty and Veronica did an episode of Trading Spaces in their comic book, what was the name of the Paige Davis character? And if you need a hint, I can give you the easiest hint. Do you need a hint?
I might need a hint.
Okay. It is the word. I hope, by the way, this works as a hint.
It's got to be perky something.
It is perky. That is the correct answer.
Oh, well, there you go.
Do you know, surely you know, that is the word that comes up in connection with you more than any other word.
Yeah,
I love it.
I think so.
I love it.
I think so. I think... you know, bubbly, that's another one. I prefer effervescent.
Oh, yes.
Because it sounds more sophisticated.
Bubble-filled, yes.
But the truth is, I mean, I am perky. Obviously, that's not all of me, and I certainly have, you know, there's plenty of bitterness and jaded and sad in me and angry or complicated or quiet. But I am often really smiley, and a lot of that is because I've created a life for myself that I really love.
Nice.
I'm kind of pretty easily entertained. Like, I don't actually need a lot. In fact, I don't like having a lot. I'm a big, like, purger. You know, like, every 3 months I'm going through, you know, my closet and constantly, you know, giving stuff away, switching things out, changing things over. I'm not sentimental at all, which is, I think, I'm romantic. I'm very romantic. I have romantic ideas of things, but I'm not sentimental. I don't hold on to anything.
Love it. It's such a great way to go about it. Such a great way. Well, listen, this is the question. It comes down to the final question. I'm feeling pretty good about this one, I think.
I'm, like, looking for my page by page.
No, I'm going faster then.
I can't find it.
Mine's in my hand, by the way. I did, for our listeners, I did look up. It was indeed Howie Mandel was the center square.
Thank you.
So, yes, okay.
Thank you.
Howie Mandel. Last question. Name any, you don't need to give the names of the reptiles, but any of the types of the three reptiles that you had to encounter during season 3 of Trading Spaces. They had you interacting with a lot of different reptiles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had an iguana.
There you go.
I had a lizard that
yep.
sliced my lip with its tail.
Unbelievable.
That's really the first one I remember. I wrestled an alligator or crocodile.
That was all three.
Oh.
You only had to name one. Paige Davis, a winner of this week's quiz on this show, is so great. Well done, Paige.
Thank you. I feel like the kid who gets a trophy even when they lose.
It's like a dog barking when they go to the bathroom. It's all good. Everybody gets a treat, Paige.
Everybody wins. Everybody gets a treat.
Well,
my mom is like, I wish I got a treat every time I
defecate. Well, last question for you, and it's a little bit different than I think I would normally ask someone, and the reason that it's different is because you have this great vlog on your YouTube channel where you talk just so poignantly and accessibly, as you always do, about people coming up to you and asking, hey, what are you doing now? And so instead of asking you that, I would like to ask you, what do you have coming up that you're excited about, just in life?
I have a couple of things.
Nice.
Well, actually, three things. The first is, you know, you mentioned the vlog. Primarily what I do is a blog, and I definitely post things. Sometimes I just post things that are video, and so it ends up getting on the YouTube channel. But something that's really special to me right now is my blog. I take it really seriously.
Great.
And I write about so many different things. Like, just, I mean, I'll write about, you know, why I don't have kids. I did a whole thing about why I don't have kids. I wrote a whole thing about why I'm, like, completely jealous of the 20-year-old girl who lives across the hall from me.
Nice.
You know, and I write about age. I write about being an injured dancer. I write about, I mean, definitely theater, family, just so many different things. And it's all really special and important to me. So if anybody wants to go to PaigeDavis.com and subscribe to my blog, I would love that. And the two projects I have coming up now are a remount of a play I did this summer. It was a premiere of a new play written by Mark St. Germain called Dancing Lessons. And we did it at Barrington Stage Company up in the Berkshires this summer.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful two-hander. And the two characters are an injured Broadway dancer and a professor of geosciences at a university who has Asperger's, a high-functioning Asperger's. And the plot is how they come together, and he thinks she can teach him how to dance for this gala function that he has to attend. But she's in denial about her injury, and, of course, because of his Asperger's, he does nothing but spew, you know, whatever is off the top of his mind. And so it's essentially a play of what happens when you've got two people in a room, one person who's in denial of the truth and the other who can do nothing but say the truth.
Nice.
And it's very funny, and it's beautiful, beautifully written and very touching. And then I also have a film. I just finished a short film based on the Henry David Wong play called Bondage.
Wow.
Which is, it was written back in the 90s, and it's called Bondage because it does take place in a bondage parlor, and I play a dominatrix, and it's, a two-hander. It's just me and my client, and that's the scenario of the piece. But the real reason it's called Bondage is because it's really about how racial stereotypes and insecurities can hold you back from being free and being loved and feeling lovable. This client's fantasies, what he wants the dominatrix to do, is to play out interracial relationships. So it's they are completely masked. They do not know which ethnicity they are.
Wow.
I mean, I know which one I am. I know I'm a white woman, but I don't know what ethnicity he is, and he doesn't know what ethnicity I am. And so I assign him, okay, today you are, you know, a white man and I'm an Asian woman, or, you know, I'm a black woman and you're this or whatever. And they go through and they play out all the different scenarios, and of course, it leads to love.
Of course it does. Of course it does.
Not giving away. But it's a beautiful screenplay, and it's essentially the play lifted. So it's great. And I got to meet Henry David Wong, which was awesome. And if people don't know who he is, he's of M. Butterfly fame and Chinglish.
Yeah.
Tony Award winning and Pulitzer Prize winning and blah, blah, blah.
So exciting. So many projects coming up. Everybody needs to stroll on over to PaigeDavis.com and follow her there. And you can click on her Facebook from there and Twitter and everything else going on. I got to tell you, Paige, you are just one of my favorite people around. You have an energy about you. And I'm not someone who often talks about energy. It's just not the way I approach things. But you have an energy to you that just invites people in and is so authentic. For folks who don't know, you do incredible work with Operation Backpacks. Everyone needs to go to your website to learn about that. And most certainly everything you've done for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights, AIDS, you've done so much for them. You really are an inspiration, Paige.
Thank you. We just made my day and my new year. Thank you so much.
Everyone, PaigeDavis.com, strolling over there now. Paige, just an amazing start to your new year. To you and to Patrick, all our best.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
From just some dumb mechanic's wife, I'm gonna be singing.
Roxy!
Yeah! Who says that murder's not an art? Yeah! And who, in case she doesn't hang, can say she started with a bang. Foxy, Roxy, heart.
They're gonna wait outside in line to get to see Roxy.
Think of those autographs I'll sign. Good luck to you, Roxy.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, certainly not a lot of time left on this week's show. Gosh, I could talk to Paige Davis forever. I even held some back because I don't think you guys understand how much I loved Trading Spaces when it was on. That was just like popcorn TV. You gathered with a group of people. I loved that show. So what a treat having her on the show. And what a world we live in that Becca and I could be on the show last week and lamenting this ridiculous new TLC show that's going to be coming out soon about, you know, my husband's not gay because he doesn't want that word associated with him. And we made that offhand comment about, gosh, what happened to TLC? It used to be great when Trading Spaces was on. Becca just said, hey, you should get Paige Davis on. Dropped Paige Davis an email the next day. And then 5 days later, Paige Davis on the show. It's a really cool world we live in with some amazing people like Paige Davis. Some gay news for you. You know, there's not a ton of news out there because it is the end of the year, the beginning of a new year. So all of the LGBT news sites and all of the press are kind of dominated with year-end lists and a ton of op-eds. It's all about the op-eds. And certainly there's some great op-eds out there right now. Over on theadvocate.com, Matthew Breen, the editor-in-chief of The Advocate, who was on the show years and years and years ago, he wrote this great op-ed called To Be Intersectional or Illegitimate. And it's all about that intersection between LGBT identity and when everything was going on in Ferguson. And he's just got a great piece in there. So you should certainly check that out. I actually decided, you know what? I don't get Out Magazine or The Advocate anymore in print form. And having spoken with such incredible people this year, like Sarah Toche from the Seattle Lesbian and Tracy Bain from the Windy City Times, and talking about, you know, the dearth of print media and how that art form, I really do believe is an art form, as well as a resource, obviously, is struggling and has always been struggling. So I paid, I think it was like $5. I barely spent anything to get Out Magazine and The Advocate for the year. Now, the hilarious part about all of that is that when I placed that online order, I assure you, I remember checking the box that you can opt into so that those magazines do not come in the white plastic wrap. And indeed, when they showed up the other day, they came in the white plastic wrap. Becca was home before I was. Surely she thought I was receiving porn. And then I talked to her and she said, yeah, I just assumed, okay, whatever. And I said, no, no, no. And I opened it. It was Out Magazine and The Advocate. The irony that I checked that box and Out Magazine came in a white plastic bag. Except that we had some folks over the other night and we were talking about it. I mean, it makes sense. I'm in a major metropolitan area. And a lot of folks aren't. And a lot of folks are in the closet or just are not in the safest place. So they still want access to LGBT media. Maybe they go to their local library, but the library has some of these sites blocked, as many libraries do. You know, This Show Is So Gay, blocked in many hospitals and libraries just because the name of the show, which is hilarious because it's always family friendly. Paige Davis cussed a couple times. I had to bleep it out. All good. All good. So for those folks, they can still have access to OUT, and the advocate and the white plastic bag puts them in a position where maybe they won't get any harassment. So I'm all for that. It's just I would like to say, for the record, I checked the box that said I do not want it coming in the white plastic bag. But still, indeed, it came in the white plastic bag. But there is a little bit of news out there. Washington, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray last week signed into law a bill prohibiting the practice of LGBT conversion therapy on minors. The legislation, which unanimously passed the Council of the District of Columbia this month, imposes fines and other penalties on any licensed mental health professionals who attempt to change the sexual orientation of a patient under the age of 18. California and New Jersey are the only other places in the U.S. who have similar bans. So, again, all of those folks out there who are saying it's all about marriage equality, and once we have marriage equality, everything is great, no, that's not true. Kudos, kudos, marriage equality in the 35, 36 states, not Ohio, but in the other 35, 36 states, but that is one issue. We still have 48 states who it's okay for licensed mental health professionals to attempt to change the sexual orientation of a patient under the age of 18. Not only does every study out there say that it doesn't work, but most of the studies, if not all of them, say it's harmful. So conversion therapy, that's something we need to be looking at. Obviously, blood donation, that's something we need to be looking at. Employment non-discrimination, adoption laws, it's a lot more than marriage equality. So, you know, we'll see. You would think that we'll probably pick up, given the number of states that we picked up last year, we will probably pick up more states for marriage equality this year, and then there will only be a few left. I assume it's going to be Ohio and, like, Mississippi, but there are all these other issues on the table. That said, the Supreme Court on January 9th, etch this date in your memory because we're going to be returning to it, the Supreme Court on January 9th will consider during a closed-door meeting whether to take up any of five marriage cases originating from Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, here in Ohio, and Michigan. If the Supreme Court agrees to take up any of the cases, arguments could begin as early as April. So January 9th. We'll be looking at that. We'll be looking at that. Hey, some interesting news out of Taiwan. The Interior Minister of Taiwan announced last week that residents will soon be able to change their gender on legal documents without proof of gender reassignment surgery. This is great news. A committee will be established to consider change requests, which will be subject to a mandatory 6-month waiting period. Taiwanese LGBT advocates praise the change in policy, with one trans activist calling it a great Christmas present. I love it. I love that. Turning our attention to our own U.S. military, just a reminder, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell did not allow LGBT people to serve openly in the military. That is a fallacy. It allows L's, G's, and B's, but not the T's. Not the T's. So the Smart Brief, the LGBT Smart Brief, had a poll out last week. Their question was, will the Department of Defense lift its ban on out transgender service members by year's end? The choices were no, yes, or I'm not sure. What do you guys say? I say no. And indeed, even though obviously I'm looking at what the answers are, but I still would have said no if I didn't know the answers, 65% of respondents said no. 19.5% said yes. And about 15.5% said they were not sure. So there's that. Last story. I like this one. In New Jersey, my home state of New Jersey, a bill introduced by New Jersey State Assemblyman Tim Eustace seeks to bar defendants in criminal cases from arguing that the LGBT status of their victims caused them to act in a state of temporary insanity. That's that whole gay panic defense. Eustace, an openly gay Democrat, noted that this gay panic defense does not appear to have been invoked yet in the state. California passed a measure similar to Eustace's in September. So it's not like people are stepping forward and saying, oh, gay panic, that's why I did this act. But there are any number of laws that are still on the books all over the country that are crazy, crazy anti-gay. Nobody is necessarily using them, but let's not even have them codified there. Look through, lawmakers, look through your laws, and let's get rid of some of the laws that are blatantly, blatantly anti-gay. Even if they're not being used, let's not have them written anywhere. It's just that. It's just that. So, you guys, let me say this to you. It has been an incredible year, an incredible 2014. We celebrated our 250th episode. Becca came on board, and that has been such a treat. We've talked to such amazing people. But at the end of the day, and certainly here at the end of the year and at the start of a new year, wouldn't be doing this show if you guys didn't listen. Your emails mean so much to me, your Facebook messages, everything that you guys do, when you tweeted us, all that fun stuff. It really keeps us going. This show is a labor of love. It is certainly a labor, if you only knew, for this week, and oh my gosh, last week. It's a labor, but we really do love doing it, and that you guys listen and that you interact with us, it just makes it so much more special. So keep dropping us lines, ken@thisshowissogay.com. You guys have an amazing end to your year. Have an incredible start to your new year. We are with you. We love that you are with us. Get out there. Do whatever it is that you do in this new year to use your voice to lift up the voices of some underrepresented LGBT folks, your brothers and your sisters, everybody who's out there. While you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?